Chapter 9. Beloved. Despite its foreign appearance, the Elenae Shard was the most perfect place Jen had ever seen. After emerging from the portal and recovering from another fit of retching, Jen gaped in awe.
"Welcome to my home," Thorbrand said boastfully as he, Yudan, and Jen removed their winter garb and repacked their gear. Jen muttered his thanks to Eldaloth for the instant relief from the cold, and he marvelled at the scene around him as they descended a steep hill down a broad path of packed, rich soil. After hours in the frozen waste, the warmth and humidity were both welcome and uncomfortable at the same time. On the heights of the hill where the portal exited, tall pines rose majestically into the air, light green moss clinging to branches and limbs. Delicate ferns and small red flowers carpeted the forest floor, a breeze mingling their scents with those of sea air and pine. Elegant white birds whirled and sang overhead, some darting back to nests hidden in cracks and grottos in the cliff wall to the east. The Shard was small, consisting of a clear, green-blue sea and a thin island, situated roughly in the middle of the water. It was little more than 2 miles across at its thickest point and 5 miles long. Brilliant white sand ringed the entire island, save where the hill rose, forming a steep cliff on one side. In the distance, Jen could just make out the sails of small fishing boats on the water. As they hiked down the switchbacks, Jen caught glimpses of the Shadan's home, a massive complex of buildings that stretched away from a palatial manor house that sat close to the hill. The manor house was perfectly square, its domed roof and walls constructed of a white stone accented with thin grooves of gold and silver. Simple cylindrical pillars ringed the three-story structure, supporting the silver roof and a balcony that went around the entire building. Numerous doors opened onto the balcony, and gauzy white curtains hung in wide, arched windows. The other buildings built to the north were simple, rectangular affairs with red tile roofs. The grandeur of the buildings lessened the farther they were from the manor house, though even the poorest quarter of the island seemed a paradise to Jen. A garden and park stretched down the middle of the island, separating the buildings on either side, and people, tiny specks from their vantage point on the hill, milled about lazily in its beauty. As they neared the bottom of the hill, the firs intermingled with and then gave way to low, deciduous trees with broad leaves and slender branches that stretched away from thick, twisted trunks, providing ample shade. Flowers of every shape, size, and colour rocked softly with the breeze, their powerful scents pleading with the passerby to stop, smell, and forget his troubles. And in his wonderment, Jen nearly did. Thorbrand noticed him gawking. "Now you understand the sacrifice I made in planning to stay in your miserable town for the winter. I would gladly let one of my warlords oversee the operation, but I can't trust any of them to act as they should. Now be honest. Have you ever seen a place as magnificent as this one?"
"No, sir," Jen answered truthfully. In his mind's eye, he had always pictured Ogmyr as grey and miserable, though, he reminded himself, Elenae was not Ogmyr proper. He chanced to look at Yudan. The portal mage had thrown off his sullen demeanour, a comfortable smile overspreading his face in its stead.
"How long will we be staying, Shadan?"
Yudan asked, with a bit of hope and only the slightest hint of apprehension. Thorbrand was in visibly good humour.
"Only a day or two, Yudan, so don't get too comfortable. I'll return you to your ice cave before long."
The dirt path joined a broad road paved with a light-coloured rock, flecked with sparkling quartz twinkling like stars in the sunshine. Two soldiers in deep purple tabards, bearing the device of the Black Hammer, came to attention as the travellers neared the gate into the complex proper. Through the silver bars, Jen spied two veiled women, simply attired in formless brown robes. They watched with curiosity for a moment, and then scampered away quickly. Somewhere children were playing, their high voices carried by the wind. Thorbrand stopped in front of one of the soldiers who tried to hide his surprise at his liege's unexpected appearance.
"Please inform my daughters they need to prepare my room and two rooms for my guests. We will need a hearty meal prepared for this evening. I would like Mina brought to the study immediately."
"At once, Shadan."
The guard opened the gate and ran through, taking the steps into the manor house two at a time. Jen and Yudan followed the Shadan through the gate and up the same steps, which terminated in an arched wooden door of a blonde wood tooled with the shapes of vines.
"Leave your travelling gear here, and it will be taken care of," Torbrand ordered.
Three veiled girls about the same age as Jen appeared at a run and each came to a knee before Torbrand.
"Your will, father,"
they intoned, heads bowed.
"Rise! Ezer, take Yudan here to his room. Lida, help her carry his things. Ona, take Jen's gear to his room. I'm taking him to the study with me. Is Mina there yet?"
"No, father," Ona asked meekly. "She was in the park. The guard went to fetch her immediately."
"Very well. Come, Jen."
The inside of the manor house was light and airy. A broad hallway from the door terminated in a circular room open to all three levels. Late afternoon sunlight from a window at the apex of the dome roof fell aslant onto the balconies and walks, illuminating the colourful and comfortable furniture set about the room in the midst of large planters of flowers and pots of tall, exotic plants. Jen wondered why no one was there, all the time hearing activity all around him on the upper levels. Torbrand led him to a nearby door on the south wall and opened it. They entered a spacious study, Torbrand crossing the room and throwing open the shutters on the other side. Light flooded in, revealing a single desk in the centre of the floor, shelves and books running along the sides, and a red divan set against the wall behind the desk and beneath the window. A deep wooden chest abutted the desk, and Torbrand stooped in front of it. After touching the chest in several places in a confusing pattern, he lifted the lid and rummaged around inside. Jen couldn't see what he removed, but the Shadan stuffed it hurriedly in his pocket and shut the lid.
"Make yourself at home on the divan, Jen. I will wait a little longer with you to introduce you to my daughter, Mina."
Jen's brow wrinkled in confusion.
"Forgive me, Shadan," Jen chanced, averting his eyes. "Why have you brought me here? What are you going to do with me? Am I to be a slave in this place?"
"You aren't that lucky. Slaves have more rights than you do. Look at me,"
Torbrand ordered. Jen complied.
"There are no male slaves on this island, though there are some tradesmen. Unfortunately for you, I have a bard of several times your skill in my employ already. I will reveal what is in store for you when I choose. In the meantime, enjoy this place. You and I will be leaving it long before either of us will want to. Now sit."
Jen settled himself on the divan, musing while Torbrand wrote a letter. If Torbrand wasn't to use him as a slave or a bard, then why bring him to the island, and why introduce him to his daughter? Was he going to kill him for sport, or perhaps shame him in front of his family as a display of power? Perhaps the Shadan would trade him or gift him to a warlord. Three soft knocks at the door interrupted his thoughts. The Shadan dropped his pen and rose immediately, crossing to the door and opening it himself. A young woman waited on the other side. Jen judged her to be a little older than himself. She was tall, slender, and unveiled, which surprised him. Her long black hair, blue eyes, and comely face marked her as the Shadan's daughter, and, unlike her sisters, she greeted Torbrand with her head held high. Torbrand embraced her enthusiastically. The Shadan's eyes, so often cruel or sullen or tinged with madness, softened to an emotion that Jen understood and did not fear. Affection. This was a beloved daughter. Jen's mind fought with the contradiction. Could this be the same man who had so casually ordered the men, women, and children of Tell slaughtered not 3 weeks before? Mina noticed Jen and pulled away from her father.
"And who have you brought? This is not the portal mage. Is this a Tolnorian noble or a Rugothian?"
"Mina," Torbrand said happily, "I bring you a rarity. This is a peasant I found in Tolnor, and one who isn't a complete idiot."
"But he's so tall," Mina remarked, regarding him thoughtfully. "And pale."
"A rarity, as I said. Jen, this is my daughter, Mina."
Jen stood quickly and bowed. Mina smiled.
"I am not nobility, Jen," she said, crossing to him.
She wore a fine robe of blue silk, quite different from the plain brown robes of the other women. Her hair fell about her shoulders in waves, and her blue eyes, while hard,
still managed to convey an intelligence and kindness Jen did not expect to encounter in an Orgmerian woman. Her countenance showed a self-assurance found in those who know they are favoured but have not been spoiled by it.
"A curtsy from me and a nod from you is all that is required of those of equal rank in Tolnor, is it not so?"
"That is so," he replied. She curtsied and he nodded, Torbrand watching with a self-satisfied smirk.
"I have matters to attend to," Torbrand announced. "Mina, I leave Jen in your charge. I know you've been wanting to meet a real Tolnorian for some time. He might actually have useful information for you. Show him the Tolnor room. He will probably find it most amusing. I will see you both for supper."
After another quick smile to his daughter, he walked out of the room, leaving the door open behind him. Mina waited until the echo of his footsteps faded away on one of the upper levels. Once she was sure he was gone, her face grew grave, and she whispered,
"I am sorry, Jen, for what I can guess my father has done to you and your village. He told me of his plan. But why are you here? He made no plans to come back. Did he say?"
"I don't know. I asked him just prior to your arrival, and he refused to tell me." Mina frowned, crossing to the door and shutting it. She motioned for him to sit at the desk chair while she sat on the divan.
"I am fearful of what he might intend. Be on your guard. While slaves have rights of challenge in Orgmir, prisoners of war do not. Do not be carried away by the comfort and finery around you. Orgmir can be a cruel place, though I must admit my exposure to the wider world is limited. My father protects me a great deal."
"He allows you to go unveiled?"
"He has ordered me to go unveiled, though I would feel more comfortable with one. I wear one while he is away, and I am glad I had forewarning of his return. He would be displeased if he knew I disobeyed him. I'm sure you know that my father is of two minds."
"Yes."
"Then remember this, for there is one thing every member of his household knows. Torbrand Cairn, Shaddan of Orgmir, despises three things above all others: disobedience, stupidity, and incompetence. He has said you are intelligent."
"He actually said that I wasn't a complete idiot," Jen corrected.
"For him, that is saying you are intelligent. But listen, you stand the best chance of survival if you obey his every whim and do your best at the tasks he sets you to. If you falter, well, I imagine I am telling you things you know well."
Her face clouded over and she leaned back.
"Torbrand cares nothing for ceremony. He respects nothing and loves nothing."
"Except you," she frowned.
"I do not know why I have his favour, though I am not sure I would call it love. It has been so since I was a child. I am not even a daughter of his first wife. I am the third child of his fifth wife, and, as such, I should walk these halls as lowly as any, but here I am dressed exquisitely and forbidden to wear the veil. I sleep alone in a room larger and finer than that of his first wife, for which she hates me, and I am never permitted to do any sort of work or be useful."
"I am sure your other sisters are jealous."
"It is true. I have no friends among my sisters. But come, that is enough. I must take you to the Tolnor room. I have 100 questions to ask you, though I'm sure I'll forget every one. Tolnor is a hobby of mine of late."
The Tolnor room was on the top floor, up 2 flights of long stairs. They took them in silence, Jen engrossed in the finery all around him. Tapestries depicting wars, animals and landscapes hung everywhere, and treasures of all varieties were on display on tables or in recessed spaces in the walls. 2 young boys, no more than 8, tore past them, laughing and yelling, engaged in a raucous game of chase.
"Brand! Dolan! Father is home!"
Mina warned. Both boys stopped immediately, eyes widening.
"Has he won the war already?"
Brand asked.
"No," Mina explained. "He is here for a visit, and I think he will want it more peaceful than you are making it."
Jen took it as a sign of Torbrand's severe discipline that 2 such energetic youths could change mood so quickly. Both tiptoed off as if a gagon was sleeping on the floor below. Mina smiled at them and resumed the climb upward. A few other young ladies loitered in the hall, all veiled and attired in the same drab brown cloth. They whispered as they passed, gawking at him. The 3rd floor felt much warmer than the others. Mina led Jen down a broad hallway to the north and pushed open a set of double doors.
"This is the Tolnor room," she explained. "It has been here since the building was constructed 100 years ago."
Jen stepped inside.
To his astonishment, a complete replica of the southern half of the Menegothian shard from the Emerald Lake southward had been fashioned from clay on an immense wooden table. The Ward Wall Mountains jutted up realistically, and even the Alewine Forest was meticulously recreated with small trees. Every major geological feature was reproduced, along with cities large and small.
"You are from here, correct?"
Mina said, pointing to a small cabin representing Tell, the name spelled out beside it in black paint.
"Yes. Then you owe fealty to Baron Forthrickshire and to Duke Norshwell. Have you seen them?"
Jen was impressed with her knowledge.
"I haven't." "Then come and look. Your king is here as well."
She directed his gaze to the walls, and Jen turned, taking in the entire room. There were small portraits of every one of the dukes, their sons and the barons, hanging about the walls, sectioned according to duchy. They had escaped his notice when he first entered due to his fascination with the map. Jen examined the pictures, finding the artwork exquisite, the faces almost alive. Duke Norshwell had a fat, clean-shaven face and beady eyes that reminded him of Bernard. Baron Forthrickshire was his opposite, his thin, angular head terminating in a long, sharp goatee. Jen went to the king, who had the largest portrait, finding him thin with long blonde hair. His beautiful queen, the black-haired Karen, was framed at his side.
"That is a wig," Mina revealed. "Your king is quite bald."
"How did the Shadan get these pictures?" Jen asked incredulously.
"It is quite clever," Mina explained. "Something Caimus, a mage in my father's service, thought up. Here."
She removed a picture of Duke Sothbran of Bloodthrone.
"Touch the canvas lightly."
As Jen did so, the colours of the picture swirled and coalesced into Jen's resemblance.
"Impressive," Jen commented,
examining his own face. The only mirror in Tell belonged to Bernard Schulz's wife Katrina, and she didn't share. The best reflection of himself he had ever seen was in the dark water of forest pools. A question came to his mind.
"Surely you didn't convince all the Dukes of Tolnor and their families to touch all these canvases?" "No," Mina replied, crossing the room to a set of drawers. "I do not know if my father would approve of me telling you this, but the canvases only need to be touched by a personal item. Even letters and parchment will do, which account for many of the pictures, as my father has personally corresponded with your dukes concerning the trip they made to meet the Ha'ulric this last summer."
She rifled through a drawer, retrieving a letter and touching it to the canvas. Duke Sothbrand's face appeared in the frame again. She put the letter back and returned the picture to the wall.
"Does the Ha'ulric come here often?" Jen asked.
Jen thought that if he could chance to meet him and could gain his favour, he might find mercy and a way out of his predicament. Mina's eyes widened.
"No," she exclaimed fervently. "He has never been here, save when he was born. I beg you not to broach this subject with my father. It infuriates him that he couldn't train the Ha'ulric, not in the sword, not in leadership, not in the customs of my people. We don't even say Shatan's name for fear. How can a man lead Orgmir or any nation without knowing the sword?" he complains.
Jen was perplexed. "Shatan doesn't know the sword?" Every tale of the prophecy painted the Ha'ulric as a man-at-arms.
"No, the Church of the One forbid him to be near blades or weapons of any kind, for his safety. He is to win by force of magic, not the blade.
At least that was the argument they gave father. In any case, it doesn't help that Shatan will take over this estate in 2 years.
I do not know that there is another place large enough for Torbrand's family. For your safety, do not mention this either."
"I understand.
But tell me, I must confess that I expected a Tolnorian peasant to be less keen of speech and mind than you appear to be. You are, I assume, apprenticed after the tradition of your people?"
"Yes, I'm apprenticed to be a bard." Mina smiled.
"Wonderful. That explains much. You know how to read, then? And you are of the age to be betrothed come spring?"
"Yes."
"Do you have someone special, then?"
She motioned for Jen to come to the balcony and sit with her on comfortable chairs.
"No and yes," he said, summarizing Regina's betrothal to Hubert.
Her eyes were riveted on his, and she absorbed every detail.
"You discourage me, Jen,"
Mina commented after Jen finished.
I understood that marriages in Tol Nort were of a kinder nature than ours. Most young women in my country are herded into a room where those our fathers deem worthy can choose whom they like, often in exchange for something. I thought that in Tol Nort there was more consideration for the feelings of the couple. It is more likely among peasants than nobility, but you can see that Regina's parents hoped to elevate her, which is done as often as possible, however wrong I may see their choices to be. But why should our customs discourage you? I am to marry one of your princes.
Really?
Who?
Arranged marriages were customary when alliances were sought between nations, but Ogmir and Tol Nort had not exchanged sons and daughters in marriage for ages. Perhaps, he thought, the coming of the Haulrik would change that.
Come,
she invited, and they returned inside, crossing to the wall where the portraits of the Kildan family hung. Duke and Lady Kildan were placed side by side, their male children beneath. Dacen, one of the Shalane's personal protectors, was to the side of his brother Gerund. The difference in their demeanours was striking. She pointed to Gerund.
It is him.
Both Gerund and Dacen were handsome men with blue eyes and dark hair. Dacen's face was rounder, jovial and inviting, while Gerund's long hair, sharper features and thin goatee gave him a more serious aspect. Jen congratulated her.
They are so different,
she remarked thoughtfully, as if she had known them a long time.
Dacen is handsome and happy, confident and innocent, obviously having lived a life full of praise and encouragement. Gerund has known challenge and disappointment. No doubt he is burdened with the weight of living up to the reputation of a famous older brother.
She removed Gerund's portrait from the wall to study it more closely.
But look at his eyes. There is such determination and goodness there. He lives without the praise, but doesn't need it. There is a fire within him, a deep will to be the best of men as he sees it in his own mind. And as he is Tol Norian and a gentleman, even if he weren't generous, which I think he is, he would act it anyway.
When was the wedding arranged? Jen inquired.
It hasn't been. Father says he will give me to Gerund when he has conquered Tol Nort.
Jen's eyes widened. Give a prince to his daughter?
What is wrong?
Mina asked, brows furrowed.
Gerund isn't likely to accept, even if ordered to do so,
Jen told her, not wanting to think about a Tol Nort under Ogmerian rule.
The war will put him in great peril as well.
She frowned, eyes nearly tearing, and Jen wished he could retract his comment. She steeled herself quickly.
Gerund is to try for the Dark Guard next spring. Father has already let his warlords know to leave him unharmed and not to hinder his travel to Rugoth.
Jen's mind reeled. Mina was indeed favoured.
She said, But tell me, am I so undesirable that he would have nothing to do with me? I'm not a stupid slave girl, and I have studied court manners.
Her vehemence caught Jen off guard.
Listen, Mina,
I meant no offence, Jen said, hoping the Shadan wouldn't show up and find that he'd upset his dearest treasure.
You are beautiful, and I'm sure you would make a wonderful wife, even in Tol Norian society. But you must understand that for a Tol Norian noble, weddings are about aligning yourself with another family. It may be hard for you to grasp, but by marrying you, Gerund would be allying himself with a family that overthrew his nation. He would lose his honour in the sight of his peers.
This information struck her hard, a hand going to her heart as if Jen had just inserted a dagger there. Again she composed herself, turning away. Jen had the unpleasant feeling of one who has murdered the dream of another.
But if I can make him love me, she countered, if he loves me, then there can be no objections.
Jen nodded, not wanting to reveal the problem with her reasoning. In Tol Nort, honour and duty superseded love, from king to peasant. An uncomfortable silence ensued. Mina crossed to the window and Jen busied himself studying portraits, seeing for the first time the nobility of his homeland. Putting faces to names proved entertaining, though Mina brooding nearby kept him edgy. The Shadan might return any moment to find his daughter upset, and if she was upset, Jen could only imagine what brutality the Shadan would deal to him as punishment. A thought struck him.
Mina, do the paintings work with something like hair?
Yes,
she said, turning around, face still downcast. Jen reached into his pocket and removed the braided lock of hair that Regina had given him.
A smile returned to Mina's face.
Is that Regina's? Come, I would like to see her.
She took down the portrait of Duke Sothbran again, and he touched the braid to the canvas. The painting swirled, revealing Regina's beautiful face framed by curly blonde locks. Jen smiled to see it, as did Mina, though Regina's soft blue eyes were tainted by fear and sadness.
She is lovely, Mina commented, though she doesn't carry the typical marks of Tolnorian peasantry either. Her father is a freeman, and her mother is the daughter of a minor baron. You are perfect for her, then. Similar in looks, and I can tell by her eyes that she must be intelligent. I'm sorry that she was betrothed to another.
I don't think it will matter, Jen added sadly. I doubt she or I will survive past winter. Shadan Cairn's voice behind them surprised them both.
Such a pathetic tale, Jen, Torbrand mocked.
Please don't kill her, father, Mina said, stepping toward him. And spare Jen as well, please.
Torbrand laughed. With a tender smile, he reached out and stroked her hair.
I see Jen has won your pity, which I should have expected. I will not kill the girl. As for Jen, I have something special in store. I cannot say he will not die, but I will promise that he will have a better chance than most of surviving.
Mina frowned, but nodded her acceptance. Torbrand continued.
Follow me, both of you. There is food waiting for us.
They took dinner on one of the balconies facing the sea. There Jen learned another Ogmerian custom. The women did not eat until after the men, and then not in their presence. Mina, however, sitting uncomfortably to Jen's left, was an exception. Several girls and one woman saw to their needs, refilling plates and cups the instant they neared empty.
The woman is the Shadan's first wife, Jocelyn, Mina whispered to Jen as they sat.
First wives managed the running of the mundane affairs of the estate. Despite her veil, Jen could feel the contempt the older woman and the other young women held for Mina. Two of Cairn's sons, Lodan and Horan, joined them. Jen guessed they were a little older than he was. They dressed as their father, all in black, and came armed with swords even to dinner. Lodan was fair-complected, Horan dark, and both carried themselves with a confident air, swaggering to their seats. The meal proceeded in silence, Torbrand deep in some thought of his own. The sun set on the opposite side of the house, and the slosh of the waves on the beach and the caressing breezes of the water relaxed Jen as he engaged in small talk with Mina. She impressed him with her poise and knowledge. Lodan and Horan standing to leave distracted them.
Lodan, come here, the Shadan said. Horan, you may go.
Mina closed her eyes and shook her head. Lodan turned toward his father, face composed.
Your will, father?
Mina, come.
Mina rose and crossed to Torbrand.
Now turn, dear.
Mina's back faced Lodan. The Shadan lifted her hair, revealing deep bruises on the back of her neck.
How did these get here, Lodan?
The Shadan demanded, face angry.
Mina and I were just sporting with each other, father,
Lodan explained, fear overspreading his words.
I did not mean to harm her. It was an accident, father,
Mina pleaded.
You are kind to defend him, Mina, but you must understand that I know something of injuries.
The Shadan concentrated, and the bruises faded.
I know what happened, Lodan. You tried to force her to eat a meal from the floor to amuse your sisters while I was gone. That you would try to cover it up only reveals your cowardice. You have harmed property that is not rightfully your own, and I invoke the challenge of justice and demand you duel with me to first blood over the matter. If I win, you will become a slave, and I will sell you into the care of another master.
You have no one to second. The testimony of women doesn't count,
Lodan yelled anxiously.
You are right. What you did was in the presence of women only, a further evidence of your weakness. But you seem to forget that I am the Shadan of Orgmir. I'll just kill you because I am angry.
Lodan dove away from his father and leaped over the side of the balcony. The Shadan's sword flashed out and sliced Logan across his legs before he fell two stories, flattening one of the many thick bushes surrounding the house. Mina ran to the balustrade and Jen followed,
Lodan pulled himself from the tangle of branches and struggled to his feet, limping off in the direction of the high hill.
"I'll catch him later," Torbran stated unconcernedly. "There aren't many places to hide here."
He turned to a pale, shocked Mina.
"Mina, dear, do not conceal these things from me. I will not take you to Tolnor with me, and I will not leave you in danger. I'm sending you to Ironkeep for the rest of the winter. The soldiers there will have better sense than your own family, it seems."
"Your will, father," Mina acquiesced, though the idea was clearly distasteful to her.
"Now go pack your things. You leave at first light."
Mina left, and Torbrand ordered everyone else away after a slave lit a lantern against the dark. Jen fidgeted nervously as the Shadan stared out at the calm sea, lost in thought. After several minutes, Torbrand's eyes cleared and he stood up.
"Come here, Jen."
Jen crossed to where the Shadan stood near the balcony.
"Eyes up, boy,"
Cairn ordered. Jen stared over the Shadan's shoulder. Cairn stood and took his sword from the mantle above the fireplace. Jen braced himself.
"Have you ever held a sword in your hands?" Cairn asked,
fingers running along the ornate scabbard.
"I know peasants in Tolnor are forbidden them."
"Just an old sword Raphael has."
"Did you like it?"
"I guess so."
Cairn smacked him across the cheek with his open palm. Jen managed to keep his balance, but his face stung and he fought hard to keep the tears out of his eyes.
"Never answer me with I guess so, or maybe, or perhaps. Those are words of the weak-willed and weak-minded. Did you like the feel of the sword?"
"Yes, I did, sir."
"Good. Have you ever wanted to learn to use one?"
"Yes, sir."
"Is there anyone you want to kill? That buffoon that's betrothed to Regina, perhaps?"
Jen was silent for a time, but Torbrand's look warned him he was taking too long to respond.
"No, sir."
This time the blow came with a fist, and it sent Jen to the floor, mouth bleeding. Tears stung his eyes, but he managed to stand again despite his reeling vision.
"Don't lie to me again, or I'll kill you where you stand. Is there anyone you want to kill?"
"Yes, sir,"
Jen replied, blood dripping off his lip and onto the floor. Cairn returned to his seat.
"Excellent."
For several moments he sat, running his finger affectionately along the blade.
"Then learn to kill you will. I wanted to teach my son the sword, but he, being the blessed one, the saviour of the world, somehow exempted him from my training. The crotchety old churchmen and magicians took him from me and decreed he should never touch a blade for fear he might hurt himself with it."
The rage and insanity rose in the Shadan's eyes.
"So they raised him! How can a man be a Shadan and not know the sword? Can you imagine a king in your country not knowing the sword? It would be a disgrace. No one would even consider him a man. Now my son is a pathetic, spoiled peacock, and I can hardly stand the sight of him. All he wants is to eat and dally and sleep. If he wants anyone killed, he orders Cormyth to do it so he won't soil his clothes. Damn, churchmen, magicians, and scholars all."
Cairn slapped the table, half coming out of his seat. Jen stood still and silent, trying to rein in knees that wanted to knock against each other.
"Well," Torbrand continued after calming himself, "you will keep me from spending this winter clawing the furniture and hearing the same songs over and over until I know them better than you."
Jen wondered what he meant. He couldn't quite believe that Shadan Cairn would actually expend the effort to teach him swordplay, but he soon found it to be true. The Shadan excused himself from the room for a few minutes and returned holding three necklaces, each with a transparent crystal. One was tinged white, one black, and the third blue. They were cut into pyramid shapes and each had a hole drilled in the top through which a thin piece of leather had been strung.
"These are old, Jen,"
the Shadan said, fingering them thoughtfully.
"I used them to train Cormyth and Omar. They were used to train me. In times long past, before the face of Triss was fully hidden, there were years of war and bloodshed, the likes of which Cihol has never known nor should hope to know again. It was during the first war with the creatures of Mikik that the prophecy of the Blessed One was given. Pontiff Athelion II, like many at the time, thought the advent of the Blessed One was to come soon, in a matter of years, and thus he sought zealously for the child among women. He also searched out the best warriors to serve to protect the Holy Child once he arrived. But the years stretched on, and the Blessed One never came. In an act of unsurpassed devotion during the Middle Peace, three of the most renowned warriors allowed the pontiff to encase their minds and souls into these stones, so that the knowledge these fighters possessed could be passed on to generations after. The second Mekkikian War began not long after, and many soldiers were trained by the masters within these stones. You will find the language they speak to be foreign, but despite not understanding their words, you will learn a great deal from them, often more than you'd care to.
Cairn came forward and placed the necklaces around Jen's neck.
Usually only one is worn at a time, but we've no time for that. It won't be easy for you at night. The stones awaken when you rest and will change you. Tonight I only have time to teach you two important lessons.
He unsheathed his sword and handed it to a disbelieving Jen. Thoughts of killing Shadan Cairn flashed through his mind, though he knew he had little chance of even laying a scratch on the man.
Attack me, Jen! I know you want to. Try it!
Jen jumped up at the invitation, and he thought he could muster up a swing both quick and strong. But even as the thought of harming Torbrand came to him, he found he couldn't move his arms. They felt as numb as they had during his trip through the White Wind Shard. Torbrand retrieved the sword.
That is the first lesson. The virtue of the magic in the stones prevents the apprentice from harming the master during the lessons, though if you are a good pupil, I promise I will remove the stones and give you the chance.
This last was said with a twinkle of anticipation in the Shadan's eye. Now Jen understood what the Shadan was about. I'm to be the Torbrand's little bit of fun before he gets around to slaughtering more hapless peasants.
Now for lesson two. Run away. Get as far from this room as you think you can.
Jen obeyed, though he recognized this would be another lesson in futility. He went into the hall, several of the young women there moving aside as he approached. With every step, his legs grew weaker until he could hardly stand up without support. The women giggled, and only as he turned around and headed back toward Shadan Cairn did his strength trickle back into him.
I can let you go as far as I wish, Torbrand explained. It's not really a matter of distance, but of whether I want to incapacitate you or not. We start back for your desolate town early tomorrow. Enjoy the comfort and the warmth while you can.
Torbrand left Jen alone the rest of the night. He hoped to encounter Mina to ask her more questions about Ironkeep, the capital of Ogmir, before retiring, but had no luck. Although it seemed the Shadan had given him the run of the place, Jen didn't venture far, fearing he would do something wrong and incur his new master's wrath. The room appointed for his use was sumptuously furnished, with a large, comfortable bed, rugs woven in warm tones, and cushions everywhere. Despite these luxurious arrangements, Jen had difficulty falling asleep, feeling an uneasy anticipation about the lessons Torbrand said the stones were to teach. As all boys did, he had fancied learning the sword, wielding sticks in pitched battles with youthful friends in the woods. Peasants weren't allowed the weapons of nobility, however, and Raphael's rapier was the only experience he had with swords, which was more than most in Tell. If a deadly encounter didn't await the end of his training, he supposed learning from Torbrand Cairn, acknowledged as the finest swordsman anywhere, would be an opportunity beyond his imagining. Weariness finally mastered worry, and he slid into sleep and dream. Before him were three men, strong in body and wise in demeanor. Warriors all. They stood before the altar of a grand church, grander than any Jen had ever seen. The whole edifice was built with white marble swirled with grey. A highly polished floor reflected sunlight, streaming in through clear glass panes high on the walls of the long chapel. Carved marble statues of holy men stood solemnly in recesses beneath each window. The ceiling arched high above, terminating in a round stained glass window depicting Eldaloth with his arms extended to embrace the world. Sunlight streamed through the glass, colouring the light that fell upon the altar and choir loft. Jen approached where the men stood, passing dark wooden benches and thin ornate columns as he traversed the centre aisle. The three soldiers before him regarded him for a few moments. Two were human and one an elf, all dressed in black, save for silver moons embroidered on their tabards. Though stern and grave,
Nobleness and kindness showed in their eyes. Kingly they seemed, though modest in dress and adornment. All wore swords at their sides, and the elf and one of the humans also had longbows. Jen wondered if this were a memory, or if he had been pulled into their time somehow. Or perhaps neither.
"Another comes before us, the youngest yet."
This came from the man with a bow. He had short brown hair and was clean-shaven. He was thinner than his human companion, giving the impression of speed. Of the three, his brown eyes were the most kind.
"I don't suppose he understands us. No one has for a long time. I wonder how the ancient tongue was lost so easily."
They did not speak the common language, but Jen could understand them nonetheless.
"I understand you," Jen said,
though he was surprised to hear a different language come from his mouth. The three soldiers raised their eyebrows.
"Well, this is unexpected," said the first human who spoke, "though a welcome change indeed. I am Samian Birchwood, captain under Lord Tolgoth of Audrian."
Samian bowed and returned to lean on his massive longbow.
"And I am Telmerin Fortower, general to the Lady Azbeth of Thorwain."
Telmerin was bald, having thick arms and legs and standing a head taller than Jen. His eyes were the colour of the sky, and a long black beard hung from his chin. Jen thought the sight of this man on the battlefield would set any intelligent enemy to running.
"I am Elberin Wisway," the elf said.
He was thin and tall, with a sharp face, grey eyes and long silver hair.
"I am commander of Ewena's third house of wind marchers. It is a pleasure to again be able to speak to one of our pupils. What is your name and your house?"
"Jen, of no house of note."
"Welcome," Elberin said. "Before we begin, we have some questions for you. First, why are we all together? It should not be so until the end of the training."
"I don't know," Jen replied, "other than my teacher said there wasn't enough time." Samian's eyebrows raised, and he spoke excitedly.
"The marriage approaches, then? Has the elk been seen?"
"The marriage is supposed to happen in a little less than 2 years. As for the elk, I haven't heard anything."
The three warriors seemed pleased.
"Then our service is nearly at an end,"
Elberin said, face happy.
"I have longed to be released. You, Jen, will likely be the last we train, though there is time for another if pinched. Is your master the Blessed One's father?"
"Yes."
"And you are to protect the Ha'ulric or the Shalane?"
"I don't think I am to protect anyone." The three were stunned, and Jen explained how he had come to the training and what Cairn's purpose was. All were angry, but Telmerin was livid.
"I did not let myself be imprisoned in these stones to provide fodder for some mad Shadan's sport."
He swore and raged for several minutes before Samian and Elberin could calm him down.
"What are we to do, Telmerin? Teach him nothing and let him be butchered?" Samian argued. "He'll be butchered either way," Telmerin countered. "It's unlikely the Shadan will let him get skilled enough to be a threat to him. I wish I could jump out of this rock and throttle that—"
"Calm yourself,"
Elberin commanded.
"If you're going to jump out of these stones, there is only one way, and that is through him. He can understand us, which means he will learn faster and better than his predecessors. If he can mask his knowledge, he might just slay Torbrand, and perhaps we can find a new master or release soon."
Telmerin considered this for a moment, and then relented with a nod. Samian stepped forward and put his hands on Jen's shoulders, eyes sympathetic.
"Jen, each of us left behind those who were very dear to us to enter these stones and commit ourselves to the service of the Shalane and the Ha'ulric. It grieves us that our knowledge should be put to such perversion, but we will not leave you a helpless victim. I am sure you understand that this will not be easy. You should learn from each of us, one at a time. But our hand has been forced, and what we will show you will not be pleasant. We can offer you little comfort other than the hope for your freedom and the freedom of those you love. May Eldaloth help you."
Samian stepped back and joined his companions, each standing with displeased but resolved faces. Elberin locked his grey elven eyes on Jen's.
"Open your mind. Let us begin."